Before I start talking about our results, I would like to put up a slide with a conceptual model of phosphorus transformation as it was put forward in the 70s by Walker and Sayers based on chronosequence studies in New Zealand. And as you can see here, total phosphorus generally decreases, markedly decreases with soil development with time. And the biogeochemical fractions of phosphorus change, where you have primary mineral phosphorus, apatite phosphorus at the beginning of soil formation, and that decreases at the expense of organic phosphorus and oxide-related phosphorus, non-occluded and occluded phosphorus. And in the late stages of soil development, then you have organic phosphorus and oxide-related phosphorus dominating. Now, the question is then, in floodplain soils, how is the phosphorus biogeochemistry in these young soils? It will obviously depend on the nature of the sediments, on their peat contents and forms, on the degree of pre-wettering, and then it will depend on the alterations in the course of soil development. Now, for European river sediments, relatively little is known about these properties and how they affect phosphorus cycling in floodplains. This is a picture of our study site at the Danube River. The objective of our study was then to follow the transformations of biogeochemical phosphorus fractions from suspended sediments in the Danube River across young river islands to floodplain soils of progressing development. And we used the chronosequence approach, studying soils away from the Danube River that have increasing age, and the soil orders were mostly entosols and development towards the mollisols order. In our study site, we had a dike that was constructed about 100 years ago that separated the inside of the floodplain from the outside, protected the outside from recurrent flood events. Now, the Danube River at Vienna, here's a nice view from the Leopoldsberg, which is a vine-growing area, by the way, one of those nice vine villages near Vienna. Danube River at that point has a drainage area of about 100,000 square kilometers, average gradient of the river of 0.41 per mil, and an average discharge of about 2,000 cubic meters per second, with a 1% quantile of 850 and a 99% quantile of about 5,000 cubic meters per second. And that's about the stage where the water enters our floodplain. The climate in the area is a continental climate with a mean annual temperature of 9 degrees C and a mean annual precipitation of about 550 millimeters. So a climate conducive to the formation of mollisols, and that's the dominant soil order in the area. The sediment sampling was conducted with this sediment trap located on the right bank of the Danube River. Here's the geometry of that trap. That was actually installed after the Chernobyl accident by a group of researchers who was interested in radionuclides, radionuclide transport in the Danube River in 1986-87. And we sampled then sediment once a month with this trap. Now, for our study, we were interested in flood events. We're interested in relating the sediment in the river to the floodplain soils. This is a picture of the 2002 flood that struck Central Europe. It was a 100-year return event, at least. And here you can see the dam, the dike that separates the inside of the floodplain on the left, the outside of the floodplain on the right side. So for this study, then we used 20 flood events, 20 sediment sampling dates following flood events from 1990 to 2006, and those are marked with these triangles here. You can see that they are all above about 5,000 cubic meters per second of discharge. Now again, the study area, here is Vienna, here's a map of Austria, Vienna in the east of Austria, and our study site east of Vienna. We had seven sites in that floodplain area. One site was located on an island, three sites were located inside of this dike, and three sites were located outside of the dike. The soil sampling was conducted in this chronosequence approach, from the river, close to the river, away from the river as the soils get older in this direction. We used a soil coring device with 8 centimeters diameter, and at each site we took 3 samples in a 50-meter equidistant triangle, and we sliced the samples in defined depth increments. The phosphorus fractionation was then conducted according to the so-called SMT protocol, which is standards, measurements, and testing program of the European Commission. The procedure is based on the Williams procedure. Basically, what it does is three aliquots of samples are extracted. In the first aliquot, apatite phosphorus is separated from non-apatite inorganic phosphorus. In the second aliquot, inorganic phosphorus, which is the sum of those two, apatite and non-apatite inorganic, is separated from organic phosphorus, and with the third aliquot, total phosphorus is determined. Now, let's have a look at the results. For the sediments at first, these are the 20 flood sediments that we studied, and you can see at the first glance that total phosphorus, which is roughly the sum of these three fractions, hasn't changed a lot in these 16 years observation period, which is contrary to findings from other researchers who found that in the Danube total phosphorus loads were decreasing in the past decades. An explanation for that could be that we sampled sediment after flood events, and of course in flood events you have a lot of mixing, you have remobilization of sediment from hydropower dams, from groin fields, and that may have caused this relatively uniform pattern. Now what is striking here is the dominance of apatite phosphorus throughout the sampling record. About 80% of phosphorus is apatite phosphorus, with very little organic phosphorus and very little oxide-related non-apatite inorganic phosphorus. So if you look back at this Walker and Sayers model, we are about really at the very beginning of this transformation, which indicates relatively young and unbettered source material. Now let's turn to the soils. You can see here I divided the sampling sites. Site number one is located on an island with an age for the upper 20 centimeters, that is, of less than 20 years based on cesium dating. Then these three samples are sampled, the three sites are inside the dike with an age of the middle point here of less than 250 years by OSL dating. And then the last three sites are located outside of the dike. And here we have an age of about less than 500 years for this middle site here. You can see that the soil pH really doesn't change much, very high pH, between 7 and 8. The carbonate content about 20% on average. Clay content relatively low at the island. And then as we go onto the floodplain, of course the sedimentation conditions change, the water slows down, and we have higher clay contents on the floodplain, but no real trend. Situation is different for organic carbon and for this weathering ratio, weathering index, oxalate over diathionate extractable iron. You can see here from looking at the organic carbon, from the island across the floodplain, inside the dike, outside the dike, organic carbon contents are steadily increasing with soil age. Outside we have mollisols here. The weathering index, iron, oxalate iron over diathionate iron, is showing an inverse trend, indicating a relatively unweathered material here on the island, and constantly decreasing weathering index, indicating increasing weathering as we go outside the dike, as we continue in age of the soils. Now, let's look at the at pedogenic phosphorus transformations. Here I plotted those 7 sites next to the sediment, to the average of the sediment from the river. And you can see that the island site is very close to what we found in the river, which is not surprising really. But when you go on the floodplain, you can see that organic phosphorus really picks up and increases as the soils get older, and it increases at the expense of apatite phosphorus. total phosphorus really hasn't changed much in the course of soil development on this floodplain. We have relatively high total phosphorus values at around 700 milligrams per kilogram. Now, what was interesting then was the correlation of organic phosphorus with particle sizes. You can see that we had a positive, significant positive correlations of organic phosphorus with particle sizes smaller than 20 micrometers, which may indicate, may point to physical protection of organic matter. And you can see that the sign changed here. We have negative correlations with larger particle sizes, and then again, a positive correlation with the coarse sand fraction, which may point to particulate organic matter. Now, if we plot then the two dominant phosphorus fractions, apatite phosphorus, organic phosphorus, as a function of progressing weathering, you can see that in the course of soil development, apatite phosphorus is being dissolved and organic phosphorus is forming. And if we relate this to the sediments, they fit very nicely into what we found for the soils here. So in our study site, we have an apatite to apatite phosphorus to organic phosphorus transformation. And we have three major clusters where the sediments from the river and the island form a cluster at the very beginning of this transformation. And the soils inside the dike take an intermediate place. The soils outside of the dike are farthest progressed, show farthest progression towards organic phosphorus. So in conclusion, you can say that the suspended flood sediments showed similar characteristics in the 16-year observation period. Apatite phosphorus was dominant, and this points to relatively unweathered material. In the course of pedogenesis, total phosphorus shows very little changes in these relatively young soils over 500 years. But what really changed is the distribution of phosphorus among biogeochemical fractions. In the very young island soils, less than 20 years, we found apatite phosphorus dominating. And that again is very similar to what we found in Danube sediments. But after less than 250 years of soil development, apatite phosphorus has markedly decreased and organic phosphorus increased. And after less than 500 years, organic phosphorus has really reached apatite phosphorus levels in the topsoil and become an equally important phosphorus fraction. And this brings me to my last slide. Very nice view here over the Danube Valley. This is about an hour upstream of Vienna, the Bachau area, another nice wine-growing area in Austria. This is the ruin of Dürnstein, where Richard the Lionhearted was kept as a hostage on his way back from one of the Crusades. And when I went there the first time, I actually thought history needs to be rewritten. I think he just didn't want to go back to England, wanted to enjoy the wine and the nice view there. So maybe you have a chance to visit that site. Next year is the Eurosoil Conference. Would be a nice chance. Okay, thanks for your attention.
We have time for one question. Does anyone have a question? What was the drainage of these soils? Were they wet, glade, or not?
Yeah, it depended on the location, the study area. Very close to the river, they were poorly drained. As we went away from the river, they became well drained, especially outside of the dike.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Quick question. What were the sampling depths you said you...
We sampled to 60 centimeters, but for this study we only used the upper 20 centimeters, except for the islands. In the islands we used the whole depth, because we wanted to relate the soils to the river sediments. And on the island we had much larger depositions in the last 20 years than on the floodplain.